Tracy, on the audio commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 1:16 p.m. and that is Pacific Summer Time. Today is May 13th. Well, I do remember back in April receiving a second-hand email where I'd been accused of knowing nothing about cryptocurrencies and that my entire method was nonsense and that no one should listen to me about anything to do with cryptocurrencies. And I certainly don't like trolling people. But the reality is, and it's something that David and I had known for a long time, it's one of the secrets to analysis that you gain from writing a letter, is that when people sing your praises, then it's usually a time when the market's about to peak. And when people call you a fool, and then that's usually because there's a mania. And the reality is that we've certainly had some manic activity in cryptocurrencies. I've the luxury now of having a break-even stop on my Ethereum short. You don't often get to short on the day of the peak in the market, but that was certainly luck on my behalf. But when we think about Bitcoin, then I think the most important thing to highlight is that it's a risk asset. It's not gold. And in that regard, I think that's one of the most important points that anyone can hope to understand. Because in many respects, gold is the ultimate bond because it can't be defaulted on. And in that, it doesn't pay interest either. So it's a zero coupon bond. But Bitcoin doesn't pay interest. But it doesn't behave like a bond. And it tends to be extremely volatile. And it tends to attract interest during bull markets. And that's exactly what we've had. So it has done spectacularly well. And I think it's important to look at Bitcoin on a log scale chart. I know that now we have people that are investing on a leveraged basis, but the majority of participants are still doing so on an unlevered basis. And we had beautiful ranges one above another, and then we had each of those ranges concluded with an emphatic upward break, and that took place all the way through until the middle of March. And then it pulled back into the underlying range, and that was a major trend inconsistency. Then we've had another failed upside break. So what that clearly demonstrated, as if one instance of a failed upside break weren't enough, that what we now had was the clear evidence that there was a surfeit of supply above 60,000. In order for a breakout to occur, what you need to have is that you need to see that ranges are explosions waiting to happen. And ranges are completed because the range encourages people to trade inside the range. It creates a vacuum of supply above the market, and subsequently when the breakout occurs, it punctures that vacuum and it sucks in new buyers, and that is what creates this emphatic move on the upside. Well, that happened all the way through from May, really from March of last year, all the way through until March of this year, and then it stopped. So that tells us that the imbalance between supply and demand has changed. And now we've had a significant pullback today, more than 10% on the downside, and it was off the lows. But there's nothing consistent about this trend any longer. Now, I'm sure there will be people looking at the length of the ranges and saying, well, there have been times over the last year when Bitcoin has gone sideways for 3 months at a time. And we're about 3 months into this range. So maybe we're putting in a big base formation, just like we had below the 10,000 level. And maybe it's not 60,000 is the big hurdle, but rather the $1 trillion market cap level. And that sounds convincing. It's a rational argument for why you might anticipate there would be a range rather than a top at these levels, and it might even turn out to be true. But in order for it to be true, we would need to see a very clear and emphatic upward dynamic coming through soon, and then a clear punch above 60,000 in order to confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. The big hole in that bullish argument is that the price is at 60,000. It's not at 10,000. It's gone up 6 times in a year. And therefore, it requires a lot more money to sustain the upward trend. And this is the big question. When you have Bitcoin so susceptible to even one of the big bulls turning bearish, and it's capable of pulling back by 10% just because Tesla and Elon Musk said that the carbon footprint is obviously insane and that Tesla will no longer accept Bitcoin, well, then that obviously takes a toll. It shouldn't have any big effect on Ethereum, but of course it does. And Ethereum was down well in excess of 10% today. But the most important thing is that, and I think it's the one thing that most people don't dare talk about, is the cyclicality of the market. The cryptocurrency sector is still dominated by Bitcoin. I don't believe it will always be dominated by Bitcoin, but it is for the moment. And Bitcoin halves the reward for mining Bitcoin once every 4 years. So that bolsters the limited supply argument. There is an acute shortage of Bitcoin because there are large holders who don't trade them. So supply is limited, and as interest in limited supply increases, then it pushes the other new investors into alternative assets. So then you have this entire universe of altcoins, and they start to perform as Bitcoin appreciates. And then they really, because of that outperformance, because they're smaller and they can move more with less money, then they start to attract a lot more interest, and they tend to really do very well. And it's generally speaking, when Bitcoin gets to about 40% of the total market cap of the cryptocurrency market, that it starts to roll over. And we've just seen that again. There is no way that at the current maturity of the market that the other altcoins can continue to advance if Bitcoin is still weak. And if Bitcoin breaks down additionally and completes a new reaction low, well then we're going to see a substantial round of profit taking and shorting coming through in these alternative cryptocurrencies as well. So then it's worth considering that gold prices were steadier in here today, and so far this looks like a little range, and it's pretty similar so far to the other little ranges that we've seen over the course of the last couple of months. And what I find interesting is that it is now consolidating below the simple moving average and above the exponential moving average. Now, when we look at the weekly chart, we can still see that there's a sequence of lower rally highs, but it does look quite likely that we're going to see that gold can hold on to its own, and that it will start to outperform, and it would start to also attract some flows out of cryptocurrencies as a safe haven asset that is still, in many respects, outside of the conventional financial system. Of course, then we have Tesla, because they have announced that they were owning Bitcoin. They've been heavily impacted by the fact that they're no longer going to accept it, but they're not going to sell any more of their own. So the price is now coming back into the region of the trend mean, but again we have this clear loss of momentum, where we had the ranges one above another, and now we've had a lengthier range at a higher price, and it's going sideways, coming back into the region of the lows. If we see it breaking down from here, well, then we'd have to at least consider the potential that it is going to come back a lot more than it already has. And what, of course, this is helping to emphasize is that the dependence of these companies that are totally dependent on access to cheap liquidity. Well, we've had a significant pop on the upside for yields over the last 4 days, and bonds were a little steadier in here today. So it looks like my stop on my long position for 10-year treasuries might have been a little bit tight, but I'm not really crying into my beer about it either, because it's a pretty well-defined range that we have here, and there is a failed downside break, and it suggests that it's more likely than not that we will go back up and test the 1.8% level. And if we continue to see upward pressure on inflation and evidence that investors are willing to react to that, well, then it would suggest that there's going to be more demand for value. And this ratio of a value ETF relative to a growth ETF, I think, is particularly interesting, because value has underperformed for a decade. And now we have a sequence of higher reaction lows, and it is firming from the region of the trend mean. It's clearly broken the downtrend, and value is performing. And value is performing for another important reason. It wasn't the group that did best during 2020. I think the most important thing about the technology sector and growth, it's less about interest rates. Obviously, interest rates is a clear and present danger in the medium term. And it's certainly something we need to pay attention to because of the susceptibility of growth to higher interest rates overall. But the more important point is that they've just gone through, the cloud sector in particular, has just gone through a period very similar to Y2K, and they have pulled forward earnings from 2021 and 2022 into 2020. And now the cloud computing ETF is right in the region of the trend mean, and it's done spectacularly well over the last 12 months. But it would be virtually impossible for these companies to continue to grow at the same pace that they did in 2020. And I think that's something that's beginning to weigh on them as investors start to migrate away. I thought it was also rather interesting that cannabis sector is also pulling back in a reasonably dynamic manner, and it broke below the $20 area on the Alternative Harvest ETF today. Tilray announced that they are buying Aphria, so that's a significant merger, and the share price has continued to pull back. Now, there is a massive race on to achieve or to capture market share and gain critical mass in the cannabis sector, particularly in Canada, in anticipation of being the biggest company, so that then they can really create a very large footprint once the federal prohibition in the USA is lifted. And of course, in between now and then they have a clear need for liquidity. And that becomes more expensive if interest rates rise. So it's an additional sector that tends to be very interest rate sensitive. Then we have the iteration of the subscription business model that the solar companies have introduced, and they're also much more influenced now by the interest rate than they are from oil prices. Now, oil was weaker in here today and pulling back by about $2 from the upper side of its range, around $70. So we may see some additional consolidation in this area. What we're also definitely seeing now is that accelerated trends are beginning to experience some resistance. So soybeans had accelerated up to its peak, and now we're getting some consolidation. It got all the way up to test the all-time peaks, and it has been extremely strong on the upside. So it's quite likely that we're at least going to have a pause and consolidation right now. I've been eager to point out the another limit down move on number in here today. So this is now 4 consecutive days limit down. This is quite similar to the kinds of moves we've had in the past where it goes limit up and then goes limit down for consecutive days. And those days can stretch into the double digits. So while there have certainly been some inflationary pressures as a result of rising commodity prices, well, some of those commodities are now due some consolidation. So we're certainly seeing some rotation and some risk getting taken off the table. But the VIX index did pull back today because it had popped on the upside yesterday for the simple reason that we had both bonds and equities falling together. Well, bonds were steadier today, even though equities were a little bit weaker overall. So the VIX is starting to come back down. I think it'll be a while before it gets back below 20, but as long as it's not shooting higher, then I don't think investors are going to be all that worried. Now, when we think about what's going on around the world, well, the majority of European markets were in positive territory today. I think it's interesting that the FTSE 100, which is generally more of a value or an index, was way off its lows in here today. So the other way of thinking about this is, in terms of value and growth, these types of companies that are heavily levered to the global economy that did not particularly do very well over the course of the last 12 to 18 months, they're in a much better position to do better as the global economy starts to turn around. And industrial companies are also starting to look better. Boeing heard today that they are going to be able to repair some of the challenges that they have with the 737 MAX, and the share is beginning to steady in the region of the trend mean. As we think about the wider global economy, well, we've certainly had some weakness coming through in markets like Japan, and it was down in another dynamic manner again in here today, so coming back into the region of the trend mean. But it was overbought and it is now pretty much on the cusp of finding support in the region of the trend mean. It could even pull back to 25,000 and it would still have the sequence of ranges one above another. So it has room in which to consolidate. I think as Wall Street steadies, that will act as support for the wider market. Of course, the yen was weaker in a dynamic manner yesterday. It didn't follow through on the downside in here today. But I think the more important point is this is looking like a consolidation. And from here, there's potential for the dollar to appreciate versus the yen. What it suggests is that the USA is going to have some competition for the world's weakest currency. And I think that will be significant competition. And then we can think about, well, if these major economies like the dollar and the yen are competing for the weakest currency, well, where are the strong currencies going to be? Well, I think it's quite likely that we're going to see them in Asia. And then we're also going to see that with the continued bull market in commodities, despite the short-term risk of consolidation. And I think that there is acute risk of consolidation right across the commodity sector because we've had such an incredible move on the upside already. But broadly speaking, it's more likely that we're going to have a medium-term bull market. And the thing to remember about commodities is that they are best bought following reactions. We are perhaps only just on the cusp of a reaction. Then we can think about the copper price. It has also raced to get up to test previous peaks, and it has paused over the last 4 sessions. I'm quite convinced of the bull market hypothesis. I do think that there is secular demand growth potential for copper, but it does not have to rally in a straight line. And there is clear potential that we could have a deeper process of consolidation, even within the context. context of a secular bull market. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to